69. From the bridge of HMS Renance, the survivors looked like a cluster of bedraggled water rats. In the dawn, they floundered and splashed around the edge of the balloon of stained and filthy water where the refugee had washed them out, like the effluent from the sewer outlet of a city. Renance found them before the sharks did, for there was no blood. There was one broken leg, a fractured collarbone and a few cracked ribs, but miraculously there was no blood. So, from a crew of 14, Renance recovered every man, including the two pilots. They came aboard with their hair matted, their faces streaked, and their eyes swollen and inflamed with engine oil. With a man on either hand to guide them, leaving a trail of malodorous refugee water across the deck, they shoveled down to the sick bay, a sodden and sorrowful-looking assembly of humanity. "Well," said Flynn O'Flynn, "if we don't get a medal for that, then I'm going back to my old job, and the hell with them." "That," said Captain Arthur Joyce, sitting hunched behind his desk, "was not a roaring success." He showed no inclination to whistle Tipperary. "Wasn't even a good try, sir," agreed the torpedo boat commander. "The Boche had everything ready to throw at our heads." "A log boom." Joyce shook his head. "Good Lord, they went out with the Napoleonic War." He said it in a tone that implied that he was a victim of unfair play. "It was extraordinarily effective, sir." "Yes, it must have been," Joyce sighed. "Well, at the very least, we have established that an attack up the channel is not practical." During the few minutes before the tide swept us away from the boom, I looked beyond it, and I saw what I took to be a mine. "I think it's certain that the Boche have laid a minefield beyond the boom, sir." "Thank you, Commander," Joyce nodded. "I will see to it that their lordships receive a full account of your conduct. I consider it excellent." And then he went on, "I would value your opinion of Major O'Flynn and his son. Do you think they are reliable men?" "Well," the commander hesitated. He did not want to be unfair. "They can both swim, and the young one seems to have good eyesight. Apart from that, I am not really in a position to give a judgment." "No, I don't suppose you are. Still, I wish I knew more about them. For the next phase in this operation, I am going to rely quite heavily on them." He stood up. "I think we should talk to them now."
"You mean you actually want someone to go on board, Blucher?"
Flynn was appalled. "I have explained to you, Major, how important it is for me to know exactly what state she is in. I must be able to estimate when she is likely to break out of the Delta. I must know how much time I have."
"Madness," whispered Flynn. "Stark, raving, bloody madness."
He stared at Joyce in disbelief.
"You have told me. How well organized is your intelligence system ashore of the reliable men who work for you? Indeed, it is through you that we know that the Germans are cutting cordwood and taking it aboard. We know that they have recruited an army of native laborers and are using them not only for wood cutting, but also for heavy work aboard the Blucher."
"So?" Into that single word, Flynn put a wealth of caution.
"One of your men could infiltrate the labor gangs and get aboard, Blucher."
And Flynn perked up immediately. He had anticipated that Joyce would suggest that Flynn Patrick O'Flynn should personally conduct a survey of Blucher's damage.
"It might be done."
There was a lengthy pause, which Flynn considered every aspect of the business.
"Of course, Captain, my men aren't fighting patriots like you and I. They work for money. They are..."
Flynn searched for the word.
"They are..."
"Mercenaries?"
"Yeah," said Flynn. "That's exactly what they are."
"Said Joyce. "You mean that they would want payment?"
They'd want a big dollop of lolly, and you can't blame them, can you?
The person you sent would have to be a first-class man.
He would be, Flynn assured him.
On behalf of His Majesty's government, I could undertake to purchase a complete and competent report on the disposition of the German cruiser Blücher for the sum of...
He thought about it a moment.
£1,000.
Gold?
Gold, agreed Joyce.
That would cover it nicely.
Flynn nodded, then allowed his eyes to move across the cabin to where Sebastian and Rosa sat side by side on the day couch. They were holding hands and showing more interest in each other than in the bargainings of Flynn and Captain Joyce. It was a good thing, Flynn decided, that the Wakamba tribe, from which Commissioner Fleischer had recruited the majority of his labour force, affected clean-shaven pates. It would be impossible for a person of European descent to dress his straight hair to resemble the woolly cap of an African. It was also a good thing about the Msenga tree. From the bark of the Msenga tree, the fishermen of Central Africa decocted a liquid in which they soaked their nets. It toughened the fibres of the netting, and it also stained the skin. Once, Flynn had dipped his finger into a basin of the stuff, and despite constant scrubbing, it was 15 days before the black stain faded. It was finally a good thing about Sebastian's nose. Its new contours were decidedly negroid.